Welcome to episode 4 of the Saddle Up Show with Shad and Destin. I'm your host, Shad McGinnis. My co-host here, Destin Adams. And before we get to the guest, Destin, I'm going to ask you real quick, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I mean, it felt like just watching Tennessee lose fixed a lot of things for me. And it wasn't just that they lost. It's that they just got manhandled like they did. Now, did they get manhandled by a better team than we did? We don't have to talk about it. You know, a butt whooping's a butt whooping, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. I'm never going to take away from the Titans falling on their face, you know, despite the misery that the Colts is in. But on a better note, we have a guest today, the first guest in Saddle Up history. This is a man that's well known in the Colts community. He's a writer for The Athletic. He's the host of the 1% Better Show. And a man who single-handedly took me through the widest range of emotions this summer when I heard his incredible podcast series that is entitled Luck. We have Zach Kiefer here with us. Zach, how are you doing?
I'm good. What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. We excited to have you here. Destin looked like he had something he wanted to say.
Zach, I still have a bone to pick with you for doing the Peyton Manning episode in the Luck series. Like,
should I just skipped over all of it?
I mean, I just don't know why you had to make me cry grown man tears to just prep me for the rest of it. I mean, I was already gonna get sad having to relive Luck, and then to have to relive Manning, it was just it hurt.
Yeah, that was probably the hardest episode, that one or the fourth one that was about pain, you know, and just how bad it was. But that was like my whole summer, guys. Like, I didn't really get much time off, and I thought the season would sort of pick up and go, and it really hasn't gone very well so far. So yeah, work's been eventful, we'll say that.
Well, thank you, man, for unlocking those emotions that my wife didn't even know I had inside of me, you know.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you guys.
Okay, well, all right, enough of laughs, it's time to get down to business. We opened up last episode talking about the things that was wrong with the Indianapolis Colts, and we want to get your perspective right before we dived into everything else. I know you can start probably from top to bottom as far as different issues that's going on within the organization. So I'm just going to ask you to pick one of those things so we don't have you here all night. What would you think is the biggest issue that this team is having right now in the first 2 weeks?
Yeah. You know, I wrote on Sunday after the game that they're a poorly constructed, poorly coached team. And I stand by that. We need to stop thinking about the Colts and what we think they are. And we need to start having conversations about what they are. So far on tape, it's a bad football team, and they don't run away from that. And inside the building, they're not running away from the fact that they have put bad football on tape. But to answer your question, Shad, this is where it starts for me, and it's the offensive line. It's been bad. And I really canvassed the locker room today, and I talked to 12 or 15 players and basically asked them, like, what the hell is wrong? And I had a good conversation with Quentin Nelson. You never know really what Quentin's going to say and how giving he's going to be in his answers. And he said, we're not getting the job done, period. And he said, we're pissed off. So there's, you know, Matt Ryan's not going to do anything. Jonathan Taylor, as good as he is not going to do anything without Pittman. With Pittman, they're not going to do anything until this line, the engine of this offense, gets fixed. And the numbers are staggering. I think they're averaging like 1.3 yards per carry before contact. Like, Taylor's not getting any lanes. So for me, if you just want me to pinpoint one thing, because there's about 40 I could go into, they're not going to do anything until they start playing better up front. They're just not.
Especially when there's so much money there. Like, this
isn't $42.2 million. It's the highest chunk of any offensive line in the league this year. Yeah, you got to perform.
This isn't the offensive line that we saw in the Grixon era where they were underperforming and they were expected to play poorly. That wasn't the situation. This is a team that has put money in this realm, in this position room, and we're just still not seeing results. That's the most troublesome thing to me about it.
It's not like we haven't been asking these questions. Like, I know there's a lot of furor about the media, and I haven't really paid attention to much of it. I've been so busy with this team, but like, it's not like I didn't say in training camp 25 times that Matt Pryor doesn't handle speed well. And I didn't think Danny Pinter had a good training camp, but he got whooped by the Lions when they were there for joint practices. And those guys haven't been good. Now, Braden Smith, that was the surprise. I thought he had a good camp. He's been bad up and down. And then Kelly and Nelson are not excused to blame either with the stunts and the twists. And they just not, I don't think there's a lot of trust with that group right now. I don't think they trust each other And I mean Pryor specifically, to get the job done, because when Costanza was out there, they didn't help him. They didn't need to. And I get he's a different breed and he's a much better left tackle, but I don't feel like there's a lot of trust with that offensive line. And if there's not trust, Kelly keeps saying we need to play five as one, and they're just not. And until that gets fixed, that's a problem. But we wrote about this. Like, Matt Pryor was a gamble. He had one career start at left tackle before this year. I wasn't sold on him, and it hasn't bared out at all.
Yeah, man. And it's funny you pinpoint offensive line as probably the biggest culprit on the field for what the Colts have been experiencing, because our first question that we're going to answer from the fans is actually from Jake. His Twitter name is at ColtsGuy505. And his question is, would you attribute the decline in the offensive line to injuries and newer pieces, or going from DeGuglielmo to Strasser? Quentin, Ryan, Braden all played elite and having seemingly regressed since Google's fired. And I think that's an extremely good point that not a lot of people is talking about. You know, if you're going to fire someone or make a change on the offensive line, which I hate to see anyone lose their job, but when you're going to make a change to something that's going on in the offensive room, he's the guy that's had his tenure the longest. You know, he's been with the offensive line for 3 years now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It's time to see progress. You know, it's time for these guys to play at the amount of money that they're making and not be able to handle a simple stunt or a simple twist or games or whatever you want to refer to it as. It's inexcusable. You know, these guys are having clear communication problems. I think this is not being communicated. It's not being passed off. We're seeing two guys blocking one guy on a stunt, and that just can't happen. You can't have free rushes coming in. I'm going to ask you, Destin, first. How do you feel about the coaching change, and do you think that is attributed to the struggles we're seeing from the offensive line?
I mean, I feel like it's hard to say that is the reason when that's not a move that immediately has happened. I mean, I talked about it a little bit last week. I still feel like the main issue I have with the build of this offensive line right now is I feel like we're asking the two guys that are struggling the most to play positions their skill set is not natural to.
Ding,
we're
ding,
asking,
ding.
We're asking Matt Pryor to play left tackle in a way where, again, I don't blame him for struggling at left tackle because his skill set doesn't match the position. If you put Pryor at guard, if you even put him at right tackle, I feel like you're seeing a guy play at a higher level. And then with Pinter, it feels like ever since he was drafted, the team told us over and over and over again that they saw him as a center. And with everything that happened this offseason, they decided to move him to guard almost out of necessity instead of just to get him on the field.
Kind of like they wanted him to play.
Exactly. They wanted him on the field, and this was just the opening that he had. And so that was the biggest thing for me that I still think is the main reason. I think the coaching changes, it's an interesting one to note. Just because so many guys have came out speaking in favor of the past offensive line coaching. But again, I just don't see a way I can make that the pinpoint reason when it was not something that happened this offseason even.
Well, there's no doubt this has popped up in my mind. Gooch had those guys playing angry. He changed the identity of that line. Remember how much different it was from 17 to 18. In 18, in the latter part of that year, that was the best this offensive line's played. And Andrew Luck didn't have to be special for them to win 10 of 11 games. Now, he was special at certain times, but remember, the balance was the first time he's really had that. And I thought that offensive line was still elite for good chunks of 19 with Strasser and for good chunks of 20, but 20 was a weird season because you had a quarterback who was throwing with anticipation as well as anybody in Rivers. And then secondly, with COVID, guys were in and out. And I remember that they collapsed in that Pittsburgh game, and they were up 24-7 early. And they collapsed because the tackles were like, I don't even remember the names. They weren't even like supposed to be playing, but Costanza was out and Smith had COVID or whatever. So, but look, they're not an elite offensive line anymore. They're not. Like, you are what you put on tape, and they're mediocre at best. I think they're allowing pressure 40% of the snaps, the dropbacks on Sunday, Matt Ryan was under pressure. And this speaks to a bigger picture because they don't have a quarterback who's going to overcome that. They knew that going into the season. Matt Ryan is not Rodgers or Mahomes or Lamar. He's not going to overcome that. And also, you don't have a receiving core who's going to overcome that. You have one stud, and then you have a bunch of question marks. So, like we talked about a lot in camp, like me and the guys on the sidelines, the media, like a lot of things needed to go well for this to work. You needed the line to play well. You needed someone to step up. at wide receiver, and we haven't even gotten to the tight end room, which is a liability. But when you force guys into positions that they're probably not best at, that's a gamble you're taking. And the gamble is biting them right now because they need everything to go right. And it never all goes right in the NFL.
The coach is just so confusing as far as how they operate. You know, you get sometimes you see Ballard at the end of last season. He says, we're not going to go into the season relying on Paris Campbell to be our number one or number two. Number two and number three. And that's exactly what you did. You know, in some facets, you want to operate as an all-in team. And then on some facets, you tend to be a little, I don't know if you want to call it irresponsible or arrogant. And you put so much pressure on Frank Reich to be able to scheme up things for these guys. You know, these guys can't, they don't have the ability to go out there and just dominate one-on-one matchups. You know, you have to really schematically get them open and make things happen for them. You're relying on Matt Ryan at 37 years old to elevate the play of the pass catchers. He's not that guy anymore. This is not 2016, 2017 Matt Ryan. You know, this guy's up in age, and he kind of needed everything to be built around him in order for him to succeed and take this team to the level that they were expecting this team to go to. And I preached all offseason, can you please just bring somebody and take a look at a couple of guys? I know Ballard has his restrictions on free agency and the way he operates, you know, but I just think it's a little irresponsible to not use free agency at all as a tool to get this team to the next level. Not saying you have to build your foundation in free agency. We all know that's never the way to go. But you use it as a tool, just like you use the draft as a tool, as you use it's different avenues to make a team better. And I think neglecting one kind of handicaps yourself. And that's the way I always looked at it. But I just digress, you know, when it comes to that type of
thing. Man, look, I hear this more than any other complaint from fans. It's because you guys have been screaming this since April, the receiver thing. And I get it, man. I've been saying it too. If you listen to any conversation I've had with JMV the last 6 months, I feel like half of the conversation's about the receivers. And you roll the dice with Alec Pierce, who was okay in camp, nothing special, with Campbell, with Doolin. And it's not like you have an Ebron who can pick up the load. And it's not like you're using Naheem the way you should be. I mean, I think Naheem should be the slot receiver for lack of better options. Yeah. So, man, I get the frustration on the fans' part, but this is not an issue you can solve right now. Like, this is not an easy thing to solve at September 21st with, like, we thought this would be an issue. I didn't think it would be an issue in week two, but when Pittman goes down, you don't have an answer. And it was unbelievably obvious on Sunday in Jacksonville that there was nowhere to go. Like, there's one play where Matt Ryan goes through three progressions and he can't throw the ball because these guys aren't open. And that goes back to what you were just saying, Shad. Like, Matt Ryan's not going to elevate the team more than a 37-year-old quarterback is going to elevate the team.
And it's great that we just kind of naturally progress to the receiver room with the next question coming up. It's like we knew it or something. I don't know.
Zach helped create this show. He must have was in the run of show,
I guess. But here we got our first voicemail question of the day that may or may not talk a little bit about the receiver room.
Hey, my name's Jordan Walls from Pittsburgh, PA. My Twitter is jwall1201. My question is, if you're the Colts, do you call the Giants and ask about Kenny Galladay and see if they'll take on part of his contract?
I guess we're going to start with Zach here. So the question was specifically on Kenny Galladay, but I think you could branch out. We could even branch out a little bit and talk about other options as well. But just so we can get the question answered at first, what are your thoughts on the possibility of trading for Kenny Galladay, Zach?
Sure. Why not? At this point. Now, is it going to happen? No, I don't think it's going to happen. You guys know how this GM operates. You know how this team operates. They're going to be patient. They think these guys are going to get better over the course of the season. Now, they probably will, but that goes back to Shad's point a minute ago about how long are you willing to live with this and how many losses does that cost you? Because it feel like it cost you Sunday. I'm all for a move. I was all for a move. I wrote a story in March that says it's time for the Colts to break the pattern and go big at receiver. Like, a lot of people criticize the Christian Kirk deal. What did Christian Kirk do on Sunday? He caught two touchdowns. And the Jags whooped the Colts. So I've been on board with it. I don't even care who it is. But it's not something they're going to do. It's not their realm of thinking. I think if they get back in the hunt and things start to work, they're going to start to explore receiver a little bit more seriously because that might be the last piece they need. But we're not even close to that right now because they're a bad football team, and it's not like one guy is going to solve the problem.
Yeah, my thoughts on Galladay is, of course, I was down with it 2 years ago when he was a free agent. It just makes too much sense to for it to happen, for the fit. He would instantly be the second best receiver on this team. But realistically, let's be serious here. You know, Ballard's not going to make a move. I know that Galladay's situation is a mess with the Giants. I heard what he came out and said today about he looked at his coaches as coworkers and it's a business. He's not surprised that he's not playing. And it's just a mess, that whole situation. But Ballard's not that type of general manager. He makes a move late in preseason, maybe. You know, you saw him go out right before season start, go get a guy like Matt Pryor, for example. You know, a guy that was a late addition. Eric Fisher was a late signing. You know, he goes late before the season start, but once the season starts, he's not making an in-season move. And to me, you know, in my opinion, I don't think he's going out and get a guy now. Will he sign up, take a look at some bottom of the roster, bottom of the room, receiving room type of guys? Sure. And, you know, if he hit there, like a Kiki Kuti he hit on last year, those type of guys, yes. But to trade a guy that's going to come in and be a starter, I just don't see it happening.
Depends on the price, too. I mean,
because he's currently going to make 18. He's making $18 million this year, and then obviously you got to trade picks for him. But just saying, what his contract is right now,
yeah, it wouldn't be a high pick, but that's such an anti-Ballard move.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't feel like Kenny Galladay, his mental makes sense for the Colts, even for just like how he goes about the football world when you're hearing him in these pressers and these media in availability. So I just don't know. I mean, I was all about Galladay when he was a free agent back when I wasn't sure if Michael Pittman was ready to be a number one. I saw number one potential in Michael Pittman back then, but I didn't know he was ready to just be put into it. And at this point, I just don't know if Galladay is the type of guy I would go get. I mean, I think Zach hit it pretty much on the head when he said that right now, receiver is not the missing piece until they fix so many other things. They have to be operating like a good football team to make that kind of move. I'm going to keep saying the same person. Rashad's heard me say this name probably 100 times this offseason, that a guy that if I am the Colts, I get these things together and I feel like I need to make a move for a winning receiver that can mesh well with what we have with Pittman, I'm calling Seattle about Tyler Lockett. I just feel like the veteran in Seattle of Tyler Lockett and the way that team is probably going to go downhill eventually, it doesn't make sense for him to be there. And if the Colts are able to move in that direction, I think Lockett is the perfect complement to a Pittman type receiver to throw on the outside. You'd probably want Seattle to eat some of that money even, because I think last time I checked on him, he was making about $16 million. I can fact check that.
Yeah, though. For two more years, I believe, for two more seasons.
I agree, Dustin. He's not a Colts type receiver. Like, they have a type at receiver, and I'm not of the opinion they don't need to change that up, but he doesn't fit the mold necessarily. I think a little bit of variation would be good, a different skill set. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think he'd be a good addition.
Yeah, when I was I just wanted to say real quick, Destin, a guy like Elijah Moore, I remember Destin was real high on Elijah Moore, and I was just looking at him. I'm like, Ballard would never draft a guy with that size. You know, that's just not his M.O. And it's not a coincidence that the type of guys that Ballard drafts struggles – have separation issues, you know, this short area quickness.
Yep. That's why I said they should go get Sky Moore in the draft, because he's exactly what they don't have. And he's quick in those cuts, in those little windows. But hey, I don't run the team. So
now the only thing that could make the receiver room look worse right now, guys, is if we had to look at someone with the number 24 in the receiver room.
Okay? Oh, that number's atrocious.
So now I wasn't anti Sky Moore. That's not at all what I mean. But man, I can't be looking at number 24 on the outside. Can't do it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's tackle our next question. Our next question comes from Twitter. It's the guy's Twitter name is @speedblue23. He says, for all of the good players that Ballard has drafted over the years for the Colts, he's also had some misses at key positions. No doubt he's a good evaluator, but is it possible he's overrated there and we're starting to see that more with the state of the roster? Zach, I'm going to go to you. I have some interesting thoughts on this, but I'm going to go to you first.
Yes, totally fair criticism. Yeah, I think my colleague Bob Kravitz said it best. He's had some great drafts, but he hasn't built a great team. And we're starting to see the limitations to a team when your best players are a left guard and a running back and an off-ball linebacker, right? I mean, like, those guys are great. They're great football players. But this is a big story I have coming out next week when they play the Titans, because ideally the best players on the field are Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor. What's the limitation? What's the ceiling when your best players are running back? Because there absolutely is a ceiling. And I've done a lot of research with the past 10 Super Bowl winners and losers and where their run game stacked up. So, look, I mean, Ballard hasn't won a division. Like, Ballard has won one playoff game and done nothing since Andrew Luck retired. And that's the reality. He's made a lot of good draft picks, a lot of good draft picks, and he's missed. And I think those Achilles heels are at some of the most important spots in the field. I'm not ready to blame them for quarterback because of what they've gone through, but there's no excuse at defensive end. And we'll see what happens with Yannick. And Kwity Paye had the two sacks in Houston, but you can't win in this league unless you get to the quarterback. And right now with that front four, without blitzing a lot, and this gets into what they're going to do with Mahomes, you cannot win. You cannot win unless you get to the quarterback. And this was the Achilles heel last year. Like, think about how many close games would have won Baltimore, maybe Tampa, if they would have gotten to the quarterback one time, Darius Leonard against Derek Carr in that Las Vegas game. So, yeah, I mean, I maybe one of the best talent evaluators in the game, but you got to build a good team, and that's all that matters. And they are not a good team right now.
I think my main issue with Ballard drafts are it's the fact, I mean, we're trading away first round picks left and right, obviously. So that's always going to do it. But it just seems like the top end of your drafts, the second round, third rounds, I feel like too many of those have missed. Because the biggest problem with Ballard is he just hits so much on these day three picks, and hitting on day three pick is simpler than hitting on a round two, round one guy. Because to hit on a day three pick, all that player has to do is produce it all, make the roster.
Yeah,
to
just be a starter.
Yeah, yeah, to find a way. So, I mean, finding the Grover Stewart.
But who wins games in this league?
Exactly, I agree. You got to find a way.
5%, the best, you know, like the top end guys. Do they have enough of those guys? Maybe, but aren't they at the right positions? I don't think so.
That's the key. The position they're at.
And that's the part that really stands out to me, is that it just feels like so many of the times with Ballard, he's able to hit on so many of these down the road guys or guys that not many people are thinking about. But it's just when he's taking all these shots on the bigger guy names, not enough of them have produced in the level that you need them to. I mean, Kwity Paye is too early to like write him off by any means, but for him to be your first round pick last year and technically the only first round pick this team has taken in the last 4 years is Kwity Paye. And right now he's not producing like that first round pick. And that's an issue. And then there's so many other edge guys you can go look at, and that's such an important position. And it's why we keep saying that pass rush hasn't been in Indianapolis since Robert Mathis retired.
Like, I just feel like, and I spoke about it a little bit last episode, the league has evolved, you know, and I feel like Ballard sometimes gets stuck in this pass mantra, you know, of we're going to build it within the trenches, which is fine. But when the thing you're prioritizing is not even working still, like, your most money spent is in your offensive line, and they're not protecting. They're not even blocking well in the run game. The money you spend on the defensive side of the ball is in the defensive line, and they're not getting to the quarterback. I mean, they're doing a decent job against the run, but they're not sacking the quarterback. They're not pressuring the quarterback. They're not hurrying the quarterback. And this league is a passing league. If you're not affecting the quarterback on defense, I don't care what the back seven is doing. You're not blitzing. You're pretty stationary. Offenses know exactly where you're lining up. They know the type of coverages you're running. So if you can't affect the quarterback, the only reason Gus Bradley had a decent defense last year with the Raiders was because they had the highest pressure rate when just rushing four people with Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue. For some reason, I don't know what it is. Yannick is not the same player that he was last year in these first 2 weeks, and it's still early. There's a lot of time. I have confidence that he will bounce back, because every season has told me he's been an 8-sack guy every season. So I have no doubt that he'll make up for what's been going on in the first 2 weeks. But it has to be a pressing issue that these guys didn't digest the scheme well, clearly, and they're not replaying fast at all. They're struggling to know where they are, where the linebackers are struggling in coverage. It's just total confusion and a lack of urgency on defense. Now, will Shaq Leonard change that? Because I know his play is infectious. His energy he brings to that defense. He's a different kind of off-ball linebacker. But you have to question what Ballard prioritizes and the way the league is going. It doesn't match. And he's trying to show that his way still works. And I just have questions on do it really.
That's fair. It's fair. And it's almost like it's not the Colts' fault for making these great draft choices. I would argue that Jonathan Taylor is a great draft choice and you're going to pay him and he deserves it. And you're going to pay Pittman a lot of money and you pay Darius and you paid Shaq, excuse me, I'm still getting used to it, and you paid Quentin. And of course you did. They're your best players. I have no problem with that. But you're right. Like, it's a different league. It's a different league. And nobody makes a Super Bowl without an elite passing game anymore. And the Colts do not have one. And I don't see them having one until some things change. And that's a problem. And that's sort of the weird dynamic they're living in right now. And I think Tennessee's the same way. They've had a better defense in the past, although their defense looked like it didn't even show up last night in Buffalo. But to your point, and I got to jump off in just a minute, but I did talk to a lot of defensive players today. And the feeling I've got is there's a disconnect on the defense. They're not comfortable in this scheme yet. I don't think anything on the tape would disagree. And they're not playing fast, like you said. And when they're not winning with those front four, I mean, Trevor Lawrence picked them apart. I mean, he picked them apart. So, you know, when you're allowing a completion percentage of 72%, that's bad, man. That's losing football. So I'm not sold on the defense either. And until I see something change, like Julian Blackman said today, like, if this doesn't change, they're going to hang 50 on us on Sunday. And I think everybody out there knows that.
So real quick, I know you got to go, Zach, and we're going to get to this after this next question that we're going to do together with me and Rashad. But knowing what you know for this week, home opener at Lucas Oil with a pretty good quarterback coming to town.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's Jackson Mahomes' brother. Something like that is what I've heard. And so I was just curious of what you feel like the score will be this Sunday.
You put me on the spot. There's going to be a lot of points, probably for one team. The thing with Mahomes is, like, only one team has blitzed him a lot and won, and it was the Colts in that weird game in 2019. I think the score was 19-9 or 19. It was so – that was like the anomaly. I don't think they're going to blitz a lot because it doesn't work with him and he'll just beat them with those quick passes. We just saw Lawrence do the same thing. I'm not picking the Colts to win. There's absolutely no reason for me to pick the Colts to win based on last week. The key for me is how do they look? Like, they got to look different. They got to look better because this next game is a really big one for Jim Irsay. Tennessee at home. You would presume the Colts are 0-2-1 in a really bad spot. You have a chance to really let the division slip away if you lose that Tennessee game. So I think the Chiefs are going to score 35 just based on – I don't think the Colts are comfortable in Gus Bradley's scheme. And unless they get some turnovers and Shaq's back, and I think he changes everything. I think he's the heartbeat of that defense, and him being on the field changes everything at home. But the Chiefs are probably going to score 35, and can the Colts keep up? Not based on the offense I saw in Jacksonville. They got two first downs, for God's sake. So we'll see, but it's not a must win, but they need to look better. And I think everybody out there watching will know it if they see it.
All right, Zach, man, I want to thank you for coming on again, taking time out your busy day. Keep killing it at the Athletic, man. I look forward to seeing what you have coming next.
Thanks, guys. That was fun. Have a good one.
And everybody, that was Zach Kiefer of the Athletic. Like Rashad said, super, super blessed, super thankful that he came on with us today. And speaking of Jackson Mahomes' brother, we do have a next question here where we're going to dive a little bit more into this upcoming game.
Using Jackson Mahomes' brother as a segue is pretty cool.
Hey, this is Evan Packard calling all the way from Loveland, Colorado. You can find me on Twitter at Evan Packard. Question for you is there any way the Colts don't get absolutely manhandled this week? Are we going to have to see Jackson Mahomes shake his little thing up in the press box as Patrick dominates the Colts? There's a game plan. I'd love to hear it. The only thing I can think of maybe getting Jonathan Taylor established on the ground. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
And now you see why. And now you guys see why it was important to bring up Jackson Mahomes' brother. But Rashad, I'll throw it to you first. Is there a game plan that you feel like is the best course of action for I mean, I know this one said to find a way to maybe win, but like just to stay competitive, like Zach just said. I don't think that it's impossible that the Colts win this Sunday, but I do think after what we've seen, to go from that to winning would just be a huge culture shock. And I don't want to put that much pressure on you.
Well, as the game plan goes, man, it sounds cliche, but the Colts have to find a way to run the football in this game, man. The Chiefs don't have this dynamic offense, statistically and DVOA and everything else. They're pretty much middle of the road, you know, middle of the pack defense that really just is good enough to get the ball back to their offense. And their offense is as elite as they come, a top five offense in pretty much every metric. The Colts have to run the ball and keep Mahomes on the sideline, bleed the clock as much as possible, make critical plays in a passing game when needed. In situational football, they have to execute, man. You can't have empty trips to the red zone. You can't have three and outs also. You have to limit the amount of times this Chiefs offense touched the ball. I've seen the injury report for both teams is longer than the school supply list. So it's not good for either one. The Chiefs have four wide receivers that's on the injury report. Mecole Hardman, Juju Smith-Schuster, Valdes-Scantling, and Justin Watson. So I don't know how that's going to impact the game. The Colts have to find a way to move the ball on offense. I notice I'm not even going to defense and how Gus Bradley plans to stop this, because I really don't think that there's anything they can do besides, you know, the defensive line plays a little bit better and put some pressure on Mahomes with just their front four, because they can't afford the blitz. They won't blitz because that's not really who he is as a defensive coordinator. But you can't afford to develop resources, to devote resources to blitzing Mahomes. You need all seven guys in coverage to take away as many throwing lanes as possible. But like I said, the key will be running the ball and making key plays in the passing games in certain situations.
To me, the area that I really focus on whenever you're playing an elite quarterback like Patrick Mahomes is the time of possession stat. You have to be able to dominate the time of possession. You have to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. And, I mean, the most common ways you do that is by running the ball very efficiently. And on defense, it can't be a situation where the defense wakes up in the second half. It has to be a situation where the defense comes on clicking at the very first opening kickoff. And from what we've seen recently, I'm not sure if I can count on that right now, and we'll see what they can do. But I think the time of possession is the stat that I would watch, because if Matt Ryan can be on the field significantly longer than Patrick Mahomes, that's the best chance that the Colts have of beating the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay. Curious, quick question, probably catch you off guard with this. Who do you think is the single most important player in this game?
I'm going to go DeForest Buckner, and because I'm going to say again, it is just so important that you're dominating the time of possession, and I trust Jonathan Taylor. He's been one of the few to do his job when given an opening these first 2 weeks, but the most talented player that has been on the field on the defense, that's supposed to be the most talented player, I should say, is DeForest Buckner. And he's pretty much just looked average the first couple of weeks. The pass rush around him hasn't helped him by any means, but it's still a fact that he has struggled. And for this defense to start out clicking at all cylinders, I think it starts with DeForest Buckner. We don't know if Shaquille Leonard is going to be out there yet, so I can't say Shaquille Leonard, even if I want to, as the leader, vocal leader of this team. So until I know he can play, DeForest Buckner not only needs to be a leader off the field in all the ways he's shown, he has to be a leader on the field. He has to be productive in the pass game. He needs to be productive in the run game. He just needs to be able to make a difference. He needs to make Patrick Mahomes uncomfortable.
Who would have thought that Grover Stewart would be the best player on the defensive line through the first 2 weeks of the season?
And it's not close. It's not close. Like, it's a obvious clear thing when you watch these games that Grover Stewart has just looked like the far and away best defensive player on the Colts.
You never would have thought there probably would have been people coming into this season that would have said he was the fourth best defensive lineman. Would have had him behind Yannick, would have had him behind Buckner, and some would even had him behind Quiddy Pay. So Grover's taking a step in the system, and he's just waiting for the rest of his guys to kind of catch up to where he's playing. I'm gonna go with I'm gonna go with Michael Pittman. I'm gonna go with Michael Pittman because he's the one guy that can truly unlock this passing game. I know Steve Spagnuolo with the Chiefs are gonna dedicate this defense to stopping Michael Pittman. You know, he's a guy that's gonna send pressure all kind of ways in a variety of ways at Matt Ryan. And Michael Pittman is gonna have to win one-on-ones, man. I believe he's the only guy that can go out there on a consistent basis and win one-on-one reps. Matt Ryan has a lot of faith in him. Saw him get a lot of targets in the first game when he played. The Colts passing game looked completely different without him. In week two, I think he's the key. Similar to what you said about Jonathan Taylor, I trust Jonathan Taylor to be Jonathan Taylor. So as long as he's getting the proper amount of touches, I'm sure Frank learned his lesson with him only getting 9 carries last
nine,
game.
Nine isn't the proper number for you?
No, 29.
Okay.
But I think that's the way that's going to go. I have a piece coming. I just submitted it today. It should be out within the next couple of days of who the Colts need to stop on the Chiefs offense to make this a game. I won't tell y'all who it is, but if you know football, you probably can figure out who the Colts need to stop on the Chiefs offense, aside from Patrick Mahomes, of course. But one of the skilled players, it's a piece that's coming. That's telling you what the Colts need to do to stop this player and make his life difficult so they can sneak out a win in their home opener. Destin, before we get up out of here, what's your score prediction?
It's hard to just put a number on how many points I think Patrick Mahomes can score on this Colts defense right now. Zach made a comment where he felt like they would score 35. We just watched the Jaguars put up 24. I feel like 35 is not a number that the Colts can even hang with. And I just – I'm going to say the Chiefs win. And I'm going to say they win 27-17.
Oh, that's interesting. Because that's interesting. I was leaning 31-21. But I'm going to go with, is Harrison Butker playing? I seen he didn't practice today. So I'm not sure if he's playing.
Hey, they'll have the best kicker in the game no matter what with Justin Reed. So
I'm going to go 34-24. I'm going to go 34-24.
We're both going 10. We're both yeah. Going a 10-point differential.
I definitely think it'll be a comfortable victory for the Chiefs. I think the Colts will keep it close early. I actually think they're going to come out and play with a fire underneath them, just because I'm sure they're hearing everything that everyone's saying. And if this doesn't motivate you, then I'm not sure anything will.
If the fourth quarter Colts from week one show up, this could be a legit game.
Fourth quarter in overtime?
Yeah, if we could see those Colts, I mean, I'm going to stick to the fourth quarter because even the offense still didn't look great in overtime. I mean, they put it in there to win, I guess, and he who shall not be named, who is no longer here with us, just sent that thing far right. But I mean, if the fourth quarter Colts showed up, I feel like this game could be one of those where you don't know who's going to win until like the minute mark in the fourth quarter type of game because of all the fire that I feel like they're going to have after this one.
And the Chiefs have a really good O-line. And you hit on a good point when you said DeForest Buckner. The one offensive lineman that I don't like for the Chiefs that has been playing spotty is the guard, Trey Smith. And if you can attack him, he's on the injury report as well with an ankle injury. So that's something to monitor. If you can line Buckner up across from him, maybe you can see Buckner win a couple of snaps. I'm sure they're going to devote a double team to Buckner. But that'll just free up these other guys, man. These other guys have to win one-on-one situations in order for this to be successful. But that has been another episode of the Saddle Up Show with Shy and Destin. Destin, do you have any closing thoughts before we get up out of here?
No, I'm just going to ask that Patrick Mahomes just takes a chill pill for for Sunday.
Do you want to tell them about your recurring piece that's on Stampede Blue right now?
So my first piece for the Stampede Blue, my first of a weekly series where I will be auditing the Colts team needs every single week, came out today. It came out this morning. So I guess when you guys are listening, it came out yesterday. So make sure you're checking that out. I ranked the team needs from one, and I ranked every single position group on the Colts. I'll tell you this, running back was not number one. And isn't that funny? No one? Haha. Okay.
It's not a live studio audience.
Yeah. We need to input that. I need a button.
A laugh track.
Yeah. But it's going to be a fun one to go with. And I'm excited to see how the team progresses as well as how the series progresses.
Okay. Like I said, my piece will be out sometime in the next couple of days or so on Stampede Blue, Player Spotlight, Behind Enemy Lines. Y'all make sure y'all look and check that out when y'all get a chance. We will see y'all next week, man. Hopefully we will be coming back fresh off a win for the first time this season. But, oh, man, I don't know, man. I'm not feeling positive vibes, but that's it from us, man. Thank y'all for tuning in. We appreciate it. We'll see y'all next week.